Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. House Speaker Robert DeLeo is promising to take up charter school expansion this legislative session, as well as opioid legislation and some energy-related bills. And he joins us now to talk about this. He's at the State House, and he's on a line there with us. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Speaker.
My pleasure, Deborah. Nice to talk to you.
So let's talk first about charter schools, because it seems like we've been talking about this for so long. So let's clarify it a little bit. Why do you think it's important to lift the cap on charters?
I think it's important so that folks can parents can have a choice, or I should say rather their children would have a choice as to which school that they wish to attend, which school is a better fit for that child. I can tell you that, you know, sitting as speaker, I'll get emails and calls and letters on a number of occasions from people outside of my district who are saying that the public school they don't feel really meets the needs of their child, and their child would like to go to XYZ charter school. It's a better fit. So that's what I'm concerned about. Is I just want to give every child in the Commonwealth, you know, the best opportunity to succeed, and for them to be able to make their choice where they feel they will succeed.
But, you know, that we have debated this for quite some time. You pushed this through before, I think in 2014, but it failed in the Senate. We spoke on our show last week with Senate President Rosenberg about this, and he said there are still negotiations going on. There may be a ballot question about charters. So there's a lot of movement there. What's the change that that may suggest that there will actually be something different about charter schools this time, do you think, Mr. Speaker?
We're not so certain of that just yet. First of all, you hit it on the head when you said that there's a ballot question. And I look at this as a means. The ballot question completely takes off the cap of charter schools. So if you're anti-charter, I don't think you want to see that happen. Both sides feel very strongly that should it go to the ballot that they would win. You know, I don't know. I'd rather not see that so-called risk, and let's try to take care of it in the legislature now. But, you know, Stan Rosenberg,
the Senate president,
you know, was of the Senate president, I'm sorry, you know, has stated that before, since it failed, that he was going to try to talk to his membership and just see if there was any type of appetite. Well, after discussing with them, they're still working on it. So it's still very questionable in terms of whether they will do a bill. As President Rosenberg has stated, they're going to take a run at it. Mm-hmm. And what the bill's going to consist of. Right now, things are still up in the air in terms of what exactly will come out of the Senate. And will it be a bill that we're going to be able to negotiate and to, you know, send to conference and get something done to send before the governor, and whether the folks who are pushing the ballot question will be accepting of it. Are they still going to go forward with the ballot question?
Okay. So essentially,
there's a lot of ifs is what I'm saying.
Right. But it would give you a little bit of leverage, and maybe you would have some kind of a cap, and that is sort of a gradual way of lifting the cap, but not a complete elimination, as the folks supporting the ballot question have suggested.
Deborah, I think you're 100% right.
Just want to make
sure it's
clear.
The bill that we had done in 2014, that really that did provide for a cap, and as opposed to just removing the cap altogether. It was a comprehensive bill. It was a bill that Chairlady Alice Peisch had put in an awful lot of time talking to an awful lot of people with different interests and whatnot, and came up with what we felt was a pretty good compromise, which passed the House. And so I'm hopeful something close to that piece of legislation will pass again.
Okay. Governor Baker released his budget proposal yesterday. Your initial reaction, is there any area that you think you might want to change?
Just released it yesterday. I was just downstairs, down in my office with the chair of Ways and Means and his staff. They're still reviewing it in terms of providing me with a summary of the major provisions of the legislation. Mm. So as of right now, I really can't comment except to say that, you know, I've heard some folks out there who are saying, well, you know, we don't feel he put enough money into this or that. Mm-hmm. And although, and you know, our priorities obviously are, you know, may be a little bit different. But bottom line, this is a very tight budget, you know, Deborah. And it's going to be very difficult. Right. Well, it's impossible to please everyone. But, you know, I'm sure that we'll have some differences as to particular line items. For instance, I'm a major proponent of, you know, early education, mm-hmm. we'll say. So I may look at that as a place where we should place more money than the governor does. But in any case, you know, I'm sure at the end of the proposal set forth by the House of Representatives after our debate, there's going to be a lot of people who aren't going to be too happy there as well. So I think it's going to be, again, a tight budget, and the debate's going to be very, very interesting. Mm.
And there was that cut to the film tax credit that the governor had mentioned during the State of the State address when he said, I am going to.
You noticed.
Yeah, I think everybody noticed. He said, Mr. Speaker, take note. This is what's happening. And, of course, he made good on that when he released his budget. So there's actually a cap on the film tax credit. What do you think about that?
I took
that?
Note. Yeah,
you took note.
I took note, and as I promised him that, you know, we would. We look at all different ways of, you know, make sure we consider the governor's proposal and where he decides to place the money, which I think one area was in the area of affordable housing, I think, if I remember correctly. But in any case, I've been a proponent of the film tax credit. It is my belief that if you take a look in terms of the ripple effect that the film tax credit has with many of the businesses, especially in the surrounding area where the film may be being done, you will see that it really stimulates the local economy. For instance, I can tell you about, God, it must be about 2 or 3 years or so ago, I spoke at the Chelsea Chamber of Commerce, and they were telling me that they just had had filming done in their city. And within that chamber were a number of people who showed up at that meeting just to let me know, please don't touch the film tax credit. Hmm. One gentleman had a paint store. One gentleman had a furniture rental place. One lady had a florist shop. There were some other people there who ran a local hotel in motel. When you look at that, and when you look at the number of local people who are employed in the industry now, I can't tell you the number of calls and letters I get from even students that are either working in films before they graduate with promises for a job as soon as they get out. So I think it means a lot more to the economy than some people, including the governor, may think.
Yeah, of course, we've heard the estimate that each job created by the film industry is costing $100,000 if we keep the current film tax credit in place. So some folks say that's too expensive. But also, I'm wondering about the landscape here, as we've got General Electric moving into Boston, and there are quite a few tax credits given to General Electric at the same time. Is there some inconsistency there?
I think to a certain extent, you know, I guess you're picking and choosing which industries that you feel are worth it and which you may feel that aren't. I mean, I think that the governor and the mayor did a fine job working in a bipartisan collaboration to get that deal done. It's about 800 new jobs. And what's even more wonderful about it is the fact that GE decided, although I guess I was told anyways that there were better deals from other states, but they wanted to come to Massachusetts. Probably most importantly, because of the fact of the education, that they have qualified, educated people that they can get right here in the within the Boston area that can go right to work for GE. So that was one of the major factors that I was told that entered into their decision to come to Massachusetts, in Boston in particular. And it's amazing, because whenever I talk to some businesses, and part of my role, I like to try to talk to folks into coming to Massachusetts to set up a shop, the first thing I hear in terms of what interests them about Massachusetts is our educated workforce. That's the first thing I continuously hear.
Right. I want to just make sure we have time to get to a couple of things here. The Joint Committee on Revenue has recommended that the so-called millionaire's tax should pass, and this would add an extra 4% tax on incomes over $1 million. What do you think?
Well, we have to take that up in two successive constitutional conventions. So it would have to be this year and next term at some point for it to go on to the next year's ballot. It only requires a quarter of the elected officials, which out of 200 reps is about 50 reps and senators would have to, you know, approve of it. I can tell you right now, I think Senate President told me there were some 20 senators already on board, maybe 25. Mm-hmm. So it's only going to require another 25 state representatives out of 160. So I'm going to say I think it's going to at least get 50 people, so that eventually I think it will go on the ballot. I haven't quite decided in terms of how I particularly we'll vote on it. I'm still there were some folks out there on both sides who said they'd like to talk to me before I make up my mind, and I said, oh, you know, I promised I would do that, but I will tell you that no matter which way I would vote, or the Senate President would vote, or the governor's feelings, there are at least and I'm going to suggest there are probably even more than 50 people who are going to vote to put it on the ballot. So I feel pretty comfortable with that. And in actuality, some of the thoughts is, you know, this might be something where you have folks on both sides. Let the people, decide. Let's see how strongly people will decide. Obviously, we do need the funds. We do need the funds, especially for transportation. And also, we could use them, obviously, with education as well. So I think a lot of elected officials are taking the position that, you know, let's leave it up to the voters, and we'll go along with their wishes.
Mm-hmm. Senate President Rosenberg also unveiled legislation this morning to overhaul the state public records law. Now, you've passed a similar bill in the House. Some folks say that one of the main differences is that the House bill includes a provision to study the constitutionality of subjecting the general court, the governor's office, and the judicial branch to the public records law. Common Cause says the Senate bill is stronger. Well, what do you think about that?
I don't know what the Senate bill does say. I don't know if it says anything relative to that that particular provision. I will tell you that this is something I don't think has been touched in decades. I had extensive conversations with PM Wilmont, of course, from Common Cause. I had extensive conversations with the folks at the ACLU. And at the end of that, you know, we came up with a piece of legislation that we felt was a giant step forward in terms of the public records disclosure law. Having said that, I think probably most of the criticism from those folks after we had passed the bill came not for the fact that we did the bill, but from the fact that the amount of time that the clerks would have to complete their task of getting all the materials to whoever requested it. We had quite a bit of opposition and some vocal opposition from the Mass Municipal Association, in particular select people, mayors, especially clerks, who said that, you know, with the law that was proposed, that they just couldn't meet those types of time requirements. So the biggest change that we made was to allow them to give them more time to comply with the request. Mm. There were some people who said that, we appreciate they may need more time, but you, House of Representatives, you were much too generous into the amount of time that you gave them, and therefore we want to cut down on that. So I think that's probably going to be one of the major differences that will be in the House and the Senate bill. And I'm just thinking of that because I heard that once the bill was passed from some of the folks who said that the time just wasn't was just too long for them to comply with the request.
Speaker DeLeo, I'm just wondering if you could tell me in just a few words, if you could only get one thing done this legislative session, what would it be?
Oh boy, I'm going to cheat on you, okay? I'm going to have to go over one. Some things I have to do, so I don't know if we count that. I want to see us keep on making progress with early education. Uh-huh. I'd like to see us do something with education in terms of charter schools. Energy is something we have to deal with. I'd like to see a diversification in terms of the energy sources that we use.
Oh, you're really cheating on me.
I'm going to say finally, because I'm going on too long, I know, and finally I'm going to say that we have to keep on making progress fighting substance abuse here in Massachusetts.
All right. House Speaker Robert DeLeo, thanks so much for joining us from the State House today.
I really enjoyed it and look forward to talking to you throughout the process.
Okay, thanks. Me too. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.